This is Turn One Thoughtsies. I'm Aaron.
And I'm Zach.
And this is episode 82, Mailbag, Core 19. Come on, man. Bring it. Also, I have a cold, so I apologize in advance for the extreme nasal quality of my recording. It is unavoidable, and we're recording this on a Wednesday. Normally, we record on Mondays, but Monday, I had very little voice, and I was also, like, sneezing and coughing, sometimes at the same time, which is very unpleasant. Do not advise. So, waiting a couple of days was the correct choice.
I agree.
So, here we are. Let's see. Oh, Patreon. Okay. So, shout out new patrons that we've gotten since the last show. Ben, Dan, Shell, and our friends at the Grammar Club, our podcast editor and the group of fine folks with whom he makes the music, and also another Ben, two Bens. We picked up two Bens, a Dan, and our friends at the Grammar Club. So thank you to all of those people.
Yeah, seriously, thank you. We'd not be able to do this without you guys. It really is appreciated.
Yeah. Everyone who had rewards coming to them should have them, as far as I know. There weren't any, like, lost in the mail. If you didn't get one, originally I was just going to do them for, like, the higher tiers. And then I was like, you know what? It's the beginning and, you know, everybody's been really great. So I just sent them to everybody, who responded to the message that I sent for their address. So if you didn't get one, send me your address. I will send you one. And we will go from there. I'm also making a couple of changes to, the rewards. Everybody from starting next month, because the billing for this month already happened. So, next month, everybody, $1 and up is going to have access to the Discord. I really just want as many people as possible to sort of be able to interact with us on there, because I feel like the discussions and the questions that people have that we can answer on there, are things that we should get to as many people as possible. So that's going to be something that changes. So if you are a $1 patron, you right now, you don't have a link to the Discord, but, I will send you one and you can just pop right in there. What else? And then the other rewards, and this is something people can certainly give us feedback about. The higher rewards got sort of convoluted. So if there are things that people specifically are interested in at the higher tiers, then that is certainly something that I would like to hear, Zach would like to hear, so we can sort of get that worked in and make it as value-filled as possible. We are like Leanne Rimes. We are all about value.
Fair.
So that's that. And speaking of value, I heard you did pretty okay at a tournament a little while ago.
Yeah, I did. GP Pitt, I think two weeks ago at this point.
It feels like longer than that. I don't know. My sense of time is all messed up from being sick, because I slept for an entire day.
Sure.
So I'm just like, don't know what day it is, don't know what week it is, don't know what just happened.
Yeah, I think it's coming up on 3 weeks. I think it's 2.5 weekends ago at this point. Boom. Yeah, made it to the top 8, and I'm going to the Pro Tour, so I'm pretty hyped about it.
Tour competitor.
Yeah. So we are officially a Pro Tour podcast now, or at least we have a member on the PT.
Yes. I will never play on the Pro Tour, and we can talk about why after you get done talking about why you are playing on the Pro Tour.
Yeah, I mean, it really was, you know, kind of the culmination a lot of effort and a lot of time, you know. I've had some near misses. I got fifth at a Team Limited Grand Prix once.
Rip.
Yeah, that one stung a little bit, but finally cracked that top eight. I actually went 11-0-4 in the Swiss, which was pretty wild.
Yeah, I saw that the on-camera match was certainly something.
You talking about the control mirror against Seagrass?
Yes.
Yeah, I had a lot of people. Yeah, so for those that didn't see, I put this ridiculous control mirror that went the full match length in game one, and we didn't finish game one. I think there were some mistakes made in the game, but it was a fun game. It really is awesome to get to play against some of the best in the world and, you know, test yourself against, you know, really good players. And Mike Seagrass is certainly one of the best Magic players in the world.
Indeed.
That game was crazy. There was a lot of back and forth. I don't think I played perfectly. I think he made some mistakes too, but, you know, it's tough when you have to make that many decisions in a game and all of them matter. So overall, very proud of myself. Very,
same.
Yeah, thank you. Very, it feels rewarding, right? Because, like, you go to so many tournaments and you put in so much time practicing, and it's like you don't always see the rewards for your effort. And I saw them this time, so it was really cool.
Go let the dog in.
Sorry, Claire was losing it.
That's okay. No, I heard the beginnings of it, and I was like, "Oh, time to go get the dog."
Yep. Yeah, but so anyway, you don't always see the rewards for your effort, and you know, I saw them this time. It was I'm not gonna lie, I don't feel like the event itself was that much different than other events I've played. Like, I don't think I was playing on another level, or that, you know, like, I had a deck that was just, like, way better than the rest of the field. I think, you know, it was just I was playing like I normally play, which, you know, I like to think is good, but I also think I got pretty fortunate in a couple games. And, you know, when you're going 10-5 in a tournament, getting lucky in two or three games, you know, that changes it. That makes you 13-2 or 12-3 or whatever. So I think that happened for me this weekend. And then, you know, I get into the top eight and right away mold a five and lose in the top eight, but – hard to complain when you get that far. It was a really cool weekend. I got to meet a lot of people. You know, got to talk to a lot of really cool people. So it's a really cool weekend, and I'm happy to bring the Turn 1 Thoughtseize brand to the Pro Tour.
Yeah, we gotta get some sick gear for when is it? November?
It is. It's in November. I will be going to Pro Tour Atlanta.
Which I'm hot Atlanta,
right?
Actually, it actually should be pretty nice down there in November.
Yeah, I'm actually. It's going to be a nice change because Novembers in Michigan generally aren't great. So
not great. That's my understanding.
Yep. So I'll be heading down there. I think it's Pro Tour Guilds of Ravnica, I believe, is the set.
I think so too.
Yep. So it'll be a new format.
Yeah. You're going to look like friggin' Dale Earnhardt. You're going to have like Turn 1 Thoughtseize everything, like hat. Full coveralls.
The full coveralls? Playmat,
gloves. Hat.
All right, I don't know about the gloves.
Glasses. Sunglasses. With, like, the slotted shades.
Okay, that would actually be really sweet. I don't know if like you can wear those.
The ones that Channel Fireball does, where it's, like, the mesh.
Sure.
So you can still see the design, but you can see through it.
Well, that'd actually be sweet.
I got big plans.
All right. Yeah.
So Teferi shouldn't be able to tuck himself, I guess, is really what I took away from that whole thing.
Yeah, no, it makes it pretty ridiculous, I guess. I mean, that's literally what the game came down to, was that we were fighting over who could get that, like, Teferi tucked into their library quicker or more often, I guess, so you didn't deck. And
yeah.
I think we talked after the match, I think. For those watching, I think I was going to win because he had less cards in the library and had more things he needed to counter than I did. Sure. So, yeah, I think what would have happened is I would have ended up winning there. But, again, you never know, I mean.
No, it's those little breaks, right?
Yep.
You know what I mean? I think that's the reward of consistency is sometimes things are going to not break your way and sometimes things are going to break your way. And when they break your way, then you get rewarded for the consistency.
No, absolutely. So, and honestly, I was listening to a podcast on the way down when I was driving there, and they were describing a similar situation that happened to somebody, and they kind of put it like this, where it's like, if you want to win a tournament, every game kind of comes down to a coin flip, and you can't really be 100% in any game. That's not really how magic works, right? But you can make it so that your percentage to win the game is 55% or 60%, something like that, right? And then when you make your percentages high enough and flip enough coins, eventually it'll come up heads enough times. So I think, you know, for me this weekend, I got, you know, or I guess it was 2 weekends ago or whatever, but, you know, the coin kept coming up my way. I got lucky a couple times, you know, dodged some bad matchups, got some good ones, and, you know, things went my way. So, again, really happy about it. Really happy I can lend some credibility to the cast.
Yeah, because God knows I was never going to do it.
I mean, that's fair, but it's not like the advice doesn't change. It's not like it wasn't there. It's just letting people know that, hey, you know, we put in the work. We're doing it behind the scenes so that we can give you guys the information, and, you know, now more people will see that. So,
my thing is, and this is funny, this is the best advice, or I guess the most clarifying advice that I ever got about Magic and sort of my perspective on playing it actually came from a conversation I had in a car on the way to SCG Regionals. This is probably 3 years ago now. So it was me, Jadeen, our friend Jake, and this other kid whose name I can't remember, who I don't think listens to the show, so I don't believe he's going to be offended. And I can see his face, but I can't remember his name. It's irrelevant. Bottom line, we were in the car, we were talking, and I was talking about some suboptimal choice that I was making because I wanted, style points, basically.
Sure.
And she was like, do you want to win games, or do you want people to think that you're clever? And I was like, that's a really good question. And the answer is that I want people to think that I'm clever.
All right, that's fair.
I kind of want to do both. I would still like to win, but I want to win in a slightly cooler way than just taking the best 75 or taking the best 60. And that is a limiting factor on how well I will ever do in a tournament setting. And that it's, and I'm okay with that. I understand that when I go into it, that I'm at a disadvantage. I'm handicapping myself for whatever, my own stupid contrarian reasons.
Yeah, but man, that is not wrong. It is what it is. Let me throw that out there, that is 100% a valid way to play Magic. You don't always have to play to win, right? And I play to win because I enjoy that, but that's not why you have to play Magic, and that's not why a lot of people play Magic, right? It's I don't know if you've ever seen the Smash documentaries, but essentially this game Super Smash Bros. Had a really cool pro scene that was kind of...
I have a story about this, so continue, but yes, also, but then continue.
Yeah, they had this really cool pro scene that was kind of not fostered by the company. It just kind of popped up just on its own, and, you know, everybody loved playing the game, and they did this really sweet documentary that just kind of, you know, tracked the history of the pro scene, I guess. And at the end of the whole thing, somebody makes this comment that is you know, I don't play, or we weren't all playing to win, because honestly, in the game, it was the same 10 people that won every single time. And they're like, we don't always come to play to win, but we come to play in a really cool way. And it's you know, that is valid. If you show up to a tournament with a sweet deck and you do sweet things and, you make friends and have fun, that's awesome. That's a good way to spend your time, right?
I think so.
Yeah, so.
Because I keep doing it.
That's fair. That is fair.
All right, so here's the follow-up story to that. My friend, Mike Ray, is ranked 9th in the world in Super Smash Brothers.
That's awesome.
So, I was chastising him earlier because he, one, doesn't have a Tinder profile, and two, that fact is not the entire thing. Like, if I was in that position, it would absolutely exist, and it would be the very first thing, because it's such an immediate, like, self-selector for people that I would actually want to get to know. Because if somebody was like, saw that and was like, you are a loser, I'd be like, no, you're a loser. I'm the ninth best Super Smash Brothers player in the world. Clearly, you're not the ninth best anything in the world. So, get wrecked.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that I would go that far, like, you know, throw it in someone's face. But it is really cool that it's like, you know, that's your
thing.
Right?
You wouldn't get that opportunity, right? Like,
I guess that's fair.
In this imaginary scenario where somebody's like at their house, like flipping through Tinder, they're not going to be like, oh, hold on, let me message this nerd and tell them that they suck so that you could like get your jab in.
Sure,
that's not going to happen.
I mean, probably not. I mean, but
maybe it would. I don't know. I don't know what people are like on there.
That's fair. But I don't know. I think just the, you know, the point there is that, like, you know, do your thing, and if it's awesome and you like it, keep doing it, because, you know, that's the best way to spend your time.
And someday I might get to live the dream where I actually do, in fact, get to win my way. And we'll see if that ever happens. Someday it'll be that glorious day in Legacy when Contamination Pox is really good and I just happen to be playing in a tournament and like nobody's prepared for it. It just like comes out of the gate and I'm like just firing on all cylinders. People are gonna be like, oh man, where'd this guy come from? And be like, I've had this bad deck put together for years.
No, dude, seriously, that happens every event. There's always like one person there that, you know, has been playing their deck. Like, they wanted to show it off, and it happens. Like, you see it, like, you look at a modern event and it's like 7 tier decks and then like, you know, Esper smallpox, like, you know.
we can talk like later in the show. We can talk about like how desperately I've been trying to make Delver happen again. So day one, day two, Sao Paulo started out pretty like reasonable. I guess the stuff that you would expect to show up showed up in the numbers that you would expect them to show up in. So Pyromancer, Mardu Pyromancer, Tron, Jeskai, the humans.
Before you go further, I don't think they necessarily showed up in the numbers you would expect, because I think leading up to this, humans had been getting less popular, but it was still kind of recognized as just the premier deck in Modern and the most played. And it wasn't here.
Yeah, I mean, it was still, I mean, it was top five, right?
Like, I mean, it was top five, but it was the most popular deck in Modern by, like, a decent amount, and now it's fourth. So that is, you know, that's a big jump. Or fall, I guess.
I mean, that's Pyromancer, right? Like, when there's a very consistent, like, removal-heavy deck for your all-creature deck to fight against...
Yeah, I mean, part of it is that humans was so good, it's not well positioned now. But I mean, this is officially the rise of Mardu Pyromancer. Like, Jeskai had been popular. Sure. Mardu Pyromancer was a play deck; it was a deck people liked, but it was never, you know, the most played deck in Modern by any measure. And at this event, I mean, it was the most played deck by
margin. I played it at a GP long before all the cards that make it playable now were printed, and let me tell you, it was bad back then.
Well, I think people are starting to recognize that it is just a good, like, it's a very good deck. It's doing really powerful things. It's very resilient. It has a lot of tools to interact with other decks. It's got a really cheap mana curve, so you know, it kind of passes a lot of Modern tests in that it's playing powerful cards. It's playing a lot of them. It's playing ways to draw those cards. And, you know, it's playing really resilient threats. That said, it didn't actually have a great day.
Yeah, until you get to day two. So the story is that the the best performing decks from day one to day two were Ironworks, Hollow One, Red Green Eldrazi, Red Green Ponza, but that's a pretty big drop off.
Well, okay, so Red Green Eldrazi and Red Green Ponza did well, but they were very, they weren't played very much at all. So part of them doing well is that, you know, it was just like a select couple people played them and they did well with their deck. Like that is more of a sample size thing.
Yeah,
the Ironworks,
Green Eldrazi,
the Ironworks one is absurd. Like the Ironworks is like literally every single person that brought Ironworks day two'd.
Yes. And then also at least one of them top eighted, right?
Yep. I think he lost in the semis. To Mardu, actually.
It was the top eight for Sub Hollow was Mardu Pyromancer, Abzan Traverse, KCI, Tron, Affinity, Amulet, Red Green Eldrazi, and another part of Mardu Pyromancer. And then the rest of the top 16, Titan Shift, Blue White Control, which is, four Terminus. Yikes. It's like Blue White Control, not like some good Blue White deck that they're calling Blue White Control. A couple copies of Burn, Titan Shift, Breach, Hollow One. So a lot of combo in the room.
Yeah, I mean, if you're looking at the top eight, you kind of think Mardu Pyromancer is the story of the top eight because it won, it put two copies in, it was the most played deck on day one. But I think part of that is just that it was the most played deck. Like when you are the most played deck, it's the most likely deck to win, and that just kind of is a numbers game. But if you actually look at the top 16, the story of this event is Scapeshift or Titan Shift. Put four copies in the top 16. It was a full 25% of the top 16. Like, that is a really good showing for a modern deck. And I think it's well-positioned. The deck is not great against Blood Moon, but it is good against the Mardu deck in general because, you know, it's good against Thoughtseize decks. And when Mardu doesn't draw their Blood Moon, they get smashed by Titan Shift. So, yeah, I mean, I think the deck is good. It's resilient. It's well-positioned against, you know, some of the decks. I think it's a little slow against Titan Shift, but it has relevant disruption. It can play Ancient Grudge and Nature's Claim. I mean, those aren't great at beating Titan KCI, but they can buy you a turn for sure. And I think the deck was well positioned this weekend, despite not showing up in the top eight.
I mean, it's a difficult to interact with combo, right? Which is like the theme right now. You know, it's like if everybody's playing combo, then the decks that prey on combo decks, which are like heavy discard, like heavy Thoughtseize decks that also have a fast clock, like those kinds of decks are the ones that rise up because, I mean, what do you do if you're like a critical mass combo deck that's not Titan Shift, because Thoughtseize is terrible against Titan Shift. But like if you're KCI, if you're you know, like Storm or something like that, somebody shreds your hand, you have two cards left, you can't combo off with two cards, and then they're like beating you down with you know, Pyromancer tokens and Bedlam Revelers and all that crazy stuff. Like they close out the game fast enough that you can't like get your critical mass back up.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the other thing Titan Shift has going for it is that the most played deck on Magic Online currently is Mono Green Tron, which is showing that big mana decks are in a good spot. Like if Tron is most played deck, it means it's doing well and it's well positioned, right? And Titan Shift kind of has this spot where it is, I think, overall a slightly worse deck than Mono Green Tron. It's slightly less powerful, but it has the same characteristics as a big mana deck, and it beats Green Tron. Like, it's favored in the Green Tron versus Titan Shift mirror. So, I mean, I think that's kind of why we're seeing it be so successful, is that it is the more dominant big mana deck when they play each other.
So I think the thing that really like stuck out to me in this top eight is just how few creatures there are.
Not a lot.
Like, aside from, so like the Abzan Traverse that came in second, first of all, I freaking love this deck. Like, this is something I would play this deck, and not even in like a, oh man, it's a like a dorky deck that I would like. Like, I love all of these cards, and like four Grimflayer, four Tarmogoyf, I'm in. Like, you got me. And then Liliana the Veil, like, Traverse, I love. Lingering Souls, I still cannot get away. Like, I know there isn't anything better, and it's maddening to me because it's just, like, so aggressively mediocre in my head that I just...
Dude, Lingering Souls is great, man. It's, like, one of the reasons Mardu is so good.
I just want something else, like... I want flying zombies.
It's so good. You know, Lingering Souls is tutus. So... I mean, sure. Like, that would be great, but... I don't know, man. Lingering Souls is maybe, so good. It's been dominant in Modern the entire time it's been here. It's a really busted card.
Maybe I'm just, like, bored of casting it because, like, I play so many Lingering Souls decks.
No, I mean, and that's fair. Just, it's like, just... It's so good in so many subtle ways. Like... The flashback of 2 mana for 2/1/1 flyers out of your graveyard is so ridiculous.
Yeah.
And it's weird because the front side is not good. But correct. The back side is so good that it's just like... Like, Mardu plays the card legitimately without white in their deck. Like, they will blood moon themselves out of white a lot of the time just to pitch Lingering Souls to cast it from its backside. And when they do that, it's, like, legitimately great, which is wild. It's a very... Very strange, but the card is that good that it's worth doing.
So the other, aside from the sort of the KCI issue, which we will touch on briefly, some of the other stuff that I really liked in this top eight is this red-green Eldrazi deck just won't go away. Like, any time where there's a spot where, like, Reality Smasher... or, like, just Bloodbraid value is going to get you over the top. This deck is so good. And the blowouts with Eldrazi Obligator are not only insanely powerful, but also very satisfying. Like,
yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, this card, or this deck is ridiculous, man. It is way underplayed for its, like, actual strength in Modern. It's disruptive. It has a fast clock. It's fair, which people seem to favor. Like, I think if you look at Modern in general, fair decks are way overplayed and unfair decks are way underplayed because people just naturally prefer to play fair decks. Like, not everybody, but, like, on the whole, the Magic population has a slight slant towards playing fair, mid-rangey decks. And this fits that description perfectly. It's an awesome, it's an extremely powerful deck, and yet it still is underplayed for some reason.
Yeah, I mean, it contains 3 copies of Modern Staple Boreal Druid.
Which is, by the way, a technology increase for this deck. That is something the deck needed, was that it could not cast spells through Blood Moon. If you notice, like, a lot of the decks were playing, you know, kind of nonsense cards. Oh, not nonsense. Mindstone is a good card. But they were playing cards like Mindstone, which the deck itself didn't want for curve purposes. Like, it is the prototypical 1-3 deck, kind of like just green decks are in Modern. And Mindstone was not good in that situation, but you needed to play it because it's so cold to Blood Moon, because they don't really play Wastes. So they can't cast their Eldrazi through Blood Moon, except Boreal Druid conveniently makes colorless mana. So you can still, you know, play your turn 1 Boreal Druid, and they go turn 2 Desperate Ritual Blood Moon, and you're like, alright, Matter Reshaper, next turn Thought Knot, next turn Reality Smasher, you lose.
Yeah. Oh, man. This deck is so I got beat up hard playing against this deck.
Well, the creatures are just so big. It's so good against Blood Moon. It gets value out of its creatures. It gets values out of its lands. It gets to play Ancient Stirrings and Eldrazi Temple, which are both busted. It gets to play Lightning Bolt, which is probably the best removal spell in Modern still. Maybe not probably. It probably just is. But it's, you know, the deck is good and it's underplayed.
It hasn't felt great for me recently. But I mean, like I said, the scarcity of creatures is notable to me because Like, I'm definitely one of those people that when I sit down to, like, build a deck, in my head, I'm like, I need to be able to answer 10 creatures. And that is not the case anymore. So I'm sort of working on shifting my deck building mindset to be less removal heavy. And
well,
it's
so Modern's in a weird place where it's like people know that if you want to play a control deck, and control's not always well positioned, but when it is well positioned is because pile of creature decks are doing well. And what happens is the creature decks in this format generally tend to be like humans or affinity, where it's like their creature decks and everything is a creature, essentially. Or like in Affinity's case, everything is a creature or it's cranial plating. Like even the lands are creatures in that deck, you know? Mm-hmm. Which is, I mean, it's really strong. Like they overload decks that don't have enough removal. So what happens is decks like Jeskai become literal just piles of removal spells. It's all they are is removal and way to draw more removal spells. So it's like if you're building a deck, you either want to be all creatures so you have a chance to beat the piles of removal spells deck, or you want to be a deck that has like almost no creatures and the creatures you have are hard to answer, which is essentially what we're seeing here. Is like they're either humans or they're Abzan Traverse, where it's like, you know, all creatures and ways to protect the creatures and ways to find more of the creatures, or you know, humans, which is just all creatures, Affinity, which is all creatures essentially, or, you know, Jeskai and Mardu, which Mardu is like kind of the perfect example of it's all removal spells and then like Lingering Souls and Bedlam Reveler and Kolaghan's Command.
Yeah, I mean, the most played creatures, like this trips me out. Snapcaster Mage, Walking Ballista, Noble Hierarch, Street Wraith, which is not really a creature, like I don't count that. So Snap, Walking Ballista, creatures you would actually cast. Snap, Walking Ballista, Noble Hierarch, Thalia, Worm Coil Engine, top five.
Yeah, it's a weird top five.
You know? Oh, and then Gurmag Angler, but that's... So... None of these cards are in the same deck, except, well, Wormcoil and Walking Ballista are in the same deck.
Noble Hierarch, Thalia are. It's humans.
Oh, yeah.
Snapcaster Mage is a human, too. Three humans in the top five.
I don't know if I'd read into it that deeply.
It's fair.
But then the rest of it, yeah, is all humans, pretty much. Like, Ulamog, and then humans, until you hit Bedlam Reveler. But these are not, generally speaking, these are not difficult to answer creatures. So, like, all of these things minus...
I mean, every single creature on here is either a value creature or a creature that cheats on mana in some way.
Sure. Well, I'm thinking of, like, the flexibility that's required in a removal spell to, like, be considered.
Sure.
And so all this stuff... pretty much dies to Fatal Push. All of it dies to Path, obviously. Most of it dies to Dismember, and you sort of have like the flexibility. So I'm almost at the point now where I just like Damnation is just going to be my spot removal. You know, like I want to be playing like Isolate and then just Sweepers.
Okay.
Because I want my removal to be for more than just creatures.
See, I don't agree with that. What I'm seeing from this top eight is that you should just not be playing removal. You should just ignore the whole creatures thing, and you should just get your opponent dead. I mean, that's what this looks like to me.
I'm in, and that's why I'm like... So my plan... for Philly. So the Philly is the next event that I'm playing. I know you're playing between now and then, right? You have something next weekend?
I'm playing a Team Unified Modern event this weekend.
Got it. So Philly is the next big thing that I'm playing in. And I guarantee that of the two decks that I'm thinking about registering, both of them will have four Isolates in them.
I don't know about that.
Zero Path to Exile in the main deck.
I don't know about that. I think Isolate's a good card, but four is aggressive.
So is four Spell Snares, but, you know.
I mean, yeah, you can... There. I don't hate meaning it, but... Like, to me, I think the better way to approach removal in this format is to have, like, removal spells that, like, totally invalidate something or removal spells that aren't removal spells. Like in Tron's case, its best removal spell is Ulamog, which is just also its best finisher. And in Human's case, its removal spell is Reflector Mage, which is also a threat. And there are multiple decks in the format where their best removal spell is Ensnaring Bridge. And it's just like, this is my game plan. Like, I'm just doing this. And I think that's how you want to start approaching it. Like, you know me, Aaron. I love me some Jeskai. I will play Jeskai every chance I get. That deck is awesome. I'm a huge fan of it. I've been playing it for years. And it just... it's the type of deck where you just need to hit the metagame exactly on the nose. Or it just doesn't work in the format because it's... it's one-dimensional. It just is these removal spells. And yes, it has this alternate plan of, like, I burn you out, but, you know, that's not always good enough. And it just, despite it being flexible, it just isn't flexible enough. And that's the thing is, like, these other decks are proactive. Like Ensnaring Bridge is a proactive removal spell. Like, it's not even, like, it's not really a removal spell. It's just, like, your creatures don't matter spell, right?
Sure.
And it's like, well, so Reflector Mage is proactive in the sense that, like, you can just play to the board and then you play this in your head. Or, like, if nothing's happening, like, you still just have a 3-mana 2/3. Like, it's not a big deal.
Mm-hmm. So, my head, where my head is at, is I'm either going to play black white smallpox, or, like, black white control, basically. Which is very difficult to test right now because smallpox is bugged on Magic Online. So instead, I'm going to be testing Eldrazi Tron with the Thalia build. So it's like white, mono white Eldrazi Tron.
I like that. So Eldrazi Displacer is a really messed up card.
So it. The version that is, he's a streamer, but he also is like has these insane runs. Like he's one of the like 5-0 trophy leaders and does really well in all the modern events. I think Spider Space.
Yeah, Spider Space is a renowned D&D player.
Yeah, so this is a deck that he's been working on for a long time. There's a couple of things that I'm probably going to change, just because I'm not completely convinced that, like, all-in Turbo Chalice is, like, as good as it would be.
Dude, don't,
in different...
Don't change Spider Space's decks. He's a master, dude. He's a hero of the little folk, Aaron.
I understand. I'm trying to metagame the metagame, right? So if what we're saying is that removal is bad... then
okay, so
what that means is like people should be playing Infect because
people are playing Infect. It's won like two events in the last 2 weeks, but I'm not saying that removal is like unplayable. You can't have removal spells in your deck. I'm saying piles of removal decks aren't generally good, but I'm also saying that you need removal. Like you have to have removal in your deck. It just has to be in a way, like it has to be removal in a non like completely reactive way. So, like I said, Reflector Mage is great, but Eldrazi Displacer is another type of this spell where it's like, well, you know, I don't need to, like, totally remove your creature. I'm just going to tap it with my Displacer, you know? So I think that card is actually excellent in this scenario.
I've also been working on a green-white Eldrazi, or a green-white Tron build, which is bringing it back old school. You may remember the hot minute when green white Eldrazi was a thing, like before green black Eldrazi, sort of like
The Tamaros special came man. Out.
Yeah,
it was
so
the
I
counter
was like,
to Infect.
So that is also like somewhere between there because smallpox is great against Infect, because. Everything that you're doing is just bananas against them, like killing their lands. And like, if they go, like Pendlehaven, Noble Hierarch, go, and you go like smallpox, they're just done. Right.
They
won. Like, that's it. Forget it. And then, like Tron, like the Eldrazi Tron specifically build with the like the fast chalice. I mean, that's it. Oh, you don't have a Blighted Agent in your hand, you lose.
Yep.
Like Gemstone Cavern is ridiculous. Gemstone Cavern with Eternal Scourge is also ridiculous. Like, it's just there's like a lot of little things. Also, I have a lot of affection for Eternal Scourge, because that card has done a ton of work for me in the colorless Tron build that I was working on, where I was playing Perilous Vault.
Okay.
Which is also a card that I would not count out, because Perilous Vault, a fast Perilous Vault against KCI, is, I think, basically impossible for them to beat, but still probably worse than Rest in Peace.
I wouldn't say it's impossible. KCI's messed up, man. Like, you're going to activate your Perilous Vault, they're going to sack all of their artifacts, like, return them all to their hand and have 15 mana floating, and then your thing's going to resolve, and they're going to cast them all again and just keep going off. Like,
that's true.
Deck is so broken in so many ways that it's just like, that's not the way to go. The way to beat, if you're trying to beat KCI, you should just put a Blighted Agent or a Glistener off on the table, man.
Sure.
That beats KCI.
So, that being said, this is a good segue, actually, into should KCI be banned? Despite my marked and very public dispassion for the deck, I wasn't completely convinced that it necessarily needed to be banned or, like,
I can actually back this up.
Rules clarified out.
I can actually back this up. Multiple times we've argued about this. You've generally been on the banned side. We talked about it, like, 3 days ago, and you were like, no, we're just going to clarify the rules. It'll be fine. The deck will be as good. And I was like, okay. I thought for sure you would have been advocating a ban, but you weren't. And this is, like, one of the first times where I can remember where I am all for banning something and you weren't.
It's because I thought that the rules clarification would actually fix it, and it doesn't.
No, not at all.
So the rule in question, 6053A, is the section that dictates how mana abilities work. And mana abilities, as everyone knows, are super special abilities that happen without using the stack. They can't be responded to. And that's sort of the issue, is that you can basically, if you have priority, you can activate a mana ability at any time, no matter what's happening.
Yep.
And the issue is, because the entire KCI combo happens sort of like within that bubble, anything that you do to respond to it is going to end up like in stack limbo.
Well, the issue is that KCI is a mana ability and not an activated ability. Like, I think if you switched KCI to being an activated ability where it was kind of like Chandra Torch of Defiance is plus one that adds 2 red mana, where that's an activated ability, I can respond to that. That is not like you activate your Chandra, that just happened, now there's 2 mana in your pool, like, continue about your turn. It's like, this ability is on the stack, would you like to respond? And KCI doesn't have that, which, even if it had that, it would still be really broken. Like, do not get me wrong. Like, it would be really easy to just respond to stuff with, I'm going to sack this, I have mana floating, right? But because it doesn't have that, it's even more broken. Like, it lets you do this loop with Mirror Retriever and Scrap Trawler where you can sack them both at the same time to put both of their triggers on the stack at the same time so they can, like, trigger each other, which should never be able to happen. But it can because it's a mana ability. And then on top of that, like, even if I had a Crozen Grip in my hand, which is the absolute best removal spell I can think of to beat a Karklan Ironworks, right? Where it's like, oh, I have this removal spell that you literally can't respond to. Like, it has the text, this cannot be responded to, on it. You can still sack all of your stuff because it's a mana ability. Like, you can respond in a split second and put a bunch of triggers on the stack, have those all resolve, get them all back in your hand, make a bunch of mana, and then your Karklan dies. Which is just ridiculous.
Right. And that's, I think that's the real issue, is that, like, the last ditch safety valves of stuff like K-Grip, I mean, I would say Trickbind, obviously, but So you're basically
you can't even trick bind a KCI. Like, as ridiculous, like, that's not even a good answer, right? But like, no, it could work. Like, but it, like, if you needed to buy one turn, like, you just trick bind the first activation of KCI and boom, you got them, right?
Sure.
Except that it doesn't work at all. Like, you can't even do that.
Right. So the only thing that gets it is, or no, there's two things technically. There's Stony Silence and Phyrexian Revoker.
Yep.
Will both hit mana abilities. The problem is that both of those things are two mana, and that deck getting Engineered Explosives on two is insanely easy because they're a Mox Opal deck, and they just do that, and then you have gained literally nothing.
Yeah, I mean, and it's not even like, it's not even the Engineered Explosives.
The Stony Silence thing doesn't work with Engineered. Yeah. Engineered Explosives doesn't work with Stony Silence thing, but they have four Nature's Claim.
Well, I mean, they built their deck to answer these things, but it's like that, like, the fact that they can answer the answers is not a problem in my mind, because like, I think if you're playing a combo deck, you should have the chance to answer the answers, like, that people bring in against you. Like, if there was a card that just said, like, sorcery spell, like, one mana, Tron lands just don't work for the rest of the game, like, that'd be a dumb spell, because like, you know, you just play it and the game's over. There's no counterplay to it. But like, at least with things like Stony Silence against Affinity, it's like, sometimes you Stony Silence them and they just attack you with, you know, a Signal Petition and an Etch Champion and they get there, right? Where it's like, maybe this card's really, really good against them, but like, at least there's some counterplay to it. And it's like I think it's fine that, like, you know, you put these answers in for KCI and then they have a way to answer back. Like, that makes for fun and fun and interesting and dynamic games. Like, I think that's cool, but like, the card, Krark Clan Ironworks itself, is just so broken that it's just like, I don't know. There's so many things that are wrong with it. Where it's just like, why does it add two mana? Like Ravager's good, I mean, and it doesn't even add mana. Ravager is like, you know, is literally like a plus one counter. But zero mana sack outlets are good. And it's like, I think this card was, I mean, I don't think, I know this card was created before they really truly understood how powerful zero mana sacrifice outlets are. And especially for artifacts. Like, zero mana sack outlets for creatures are already good. But, like, artifacts are even more messed up, because artifacts, like Mox Opal, can be zero mana things that add mana. And the fact that it makes...
Yes, it turns... It turns every Mox Opal into a Black Lotus.
Yeah, every single one. And it recurs them. But that's the ridiculous thing, is, like, two mana. Like, I think at one mana, Krark Clan Ironworks would be interesting and challenging. At two mana, it's just, like... It's just too much. The card... I don't know. It had this weakness before of losing to hate, where it's like, you know, you lose to Stony Silence, and, you know, it isn't good against Rest in Peace or Leyline of the Void either. Like, those cards are good against the deck, but I don't know. It's so explosive because it, like okay, so Krakland's busted, but it also gets to play, like, two other cards that are just, like, way too good in Mox Opal and Ancient Stirring, so...
Yes. I don't know. It plays all of the really busted cards. And the other thing that sort of gets me from a, you know, like, game two, game three, like, a post-board perspective, is they have four Nature's Claim, a Beast Within, and three Guttural Response. So countering becomes very difficult, because your probable counter spell is something like Disdainful Stroke or Logic Knot or...
I don't think that's the issue. Like, the issue is just, like, how busted KCI is. It literally reads in this deck just 4-mana win the game a lot of the time, which is, like...
That is
correct. I don't know. Like, if this deck was... Like, okay, here's another thing we talk about all the time on this cast, is the rule of eight, right? Where it's, like, if you have one card that does a very unique and interesting thing in Modern, it can be very powerful, but... It's not consistent enough. Like, the deck doesn't really work that well until there are eight copies that affect, because it's like, you just don't draw that card consistently enough for your deck to enact this game plan every single game you play. But this deck having access to Ancient Stirrings and having access to Inventor's Fair, a land that tutors, which is ridiculous in a format without Wasteland, by the way. Having access to those two cards is... It just makes it so that they always are going to see Krakland every single game. Like, the card's always there, and it's just... The gameplay's repetitive. It's horrible to play against. If you've ever played against this deck, it feels miserable. Like, The trick is you're just supposed to concede, even though it has a pretty like a higher fail rate than most combo decks. I don't know. I'm getting worked up about this, but needless to say, like it's too consistent. It's too powerful. It has too many options. Scrap Trawler broke this deck in half, and it's playing like. I think you can make a legitimate artifact or like a legitimate argument that Mox Opal and Ancient Stirrings are two of the top five cards in Modern. And it's playing four of each, so
yep.
I don't know.
Yeah, no, I think from my perspective, the answer is probably to ban Scrap Trawler. Like if we're thinking realistically,
I don't
about something.
I don't want to ban. No, brings, if you're going to target this deck, you need to ban the problem card, which is Krarkland Ironworks, because it's like
we don't do that though. We ban the enablers. That's the thing because people are still going to want to play this stupid deck, and they can still play their deck without Scrap Trawler. It's just bad.
Well, no, but the thing is that it's not bad. Like we're learning now that the deck was good before Scrap Trawler got printed. It just wasn't as good. Like, it was very good. It just wasn't as good. But Scrap Trawler by itself is not even that good of a card. Like, it doesn't even see play in Standard. And it's Standard legal. And it would be good in Standard because one of the best cards in the entire format is Walking Ballista, which Scrap Trawler is, like, tailor-made to be very good with. And it sees no play because the card itself is not good. And I guess you can make the argument to Summer Bloom where it's like a Summer Bloom. But the problem is that this deck already had a set of bannings. Like, people forget that Second Sunrise is on the ban list because of how messed up it was with Krarkland Ironworks. So it's like,
yes,
I don't know. It's kind of in the same spot where it's like, we keep banning these Storm Enablers. Like, all right, Ponder Preordain, you're gone. Rite of Flame Seething Song, you're gone. Now Get Probe. And, like, all these Storm cards, and it's like, maybe we should have just banned Grapeshot. Like, I get people want to play with their cards, but, like, at some point, like,
oh, they've certainly been, yeah, they have bent over backwards. I had this conversation with somebody on Twitter where they were like, oh, well, what about Storm? What about this? What about that? And I was like, every deck that you just mentioned has had something banned out of it.
Well, and then, like, you see what happens when they do this. It's like, sure, okay, we are banning this card because we want people to still play this deck. But then they print a new card that doesn't look like it should go in that deck, and now all of a sudden the deck is broken. And, like, that happened with Baral where it was like, Baral's not printed to be a Storm card. It has this, like, weird text on it where it's supposed to be, like, a control threat in Standard. But, like, it broke Storm for, like, 3 months in Modern. And, like, I don't think that Storm's too good now, but there's so many cards from the deck that are banned that I don't necessarily think need to be banned. They just are banned because Grapeshot's dumb in this format that doesn't have, you know, Wasteland and Stifle and Force Will and stuff. So, I don't know. But my thing is, if you leave Krarkland out and you let Krarkland still have Ancient Stirrings and Mox Opal, like, you're going to find a way to break this deck again. It's just a matter of time. It's like,
sure.
And the fact that, like, Krarkland is just a design mistake, like, I think at some point you just, like, admit, like, okay, this card might just be a Gitaxian Probe. Like, it's not fun. It creates net negative in the game. It's a little too good for what we were trying to do with it. Like, let's just get it out of here. And the format gets better when it leaves, I think.
Oh, it certainly does. I mean, that's not really I don't think anybody would argue that, like, having an eggs deck makes a format better. Like,
I mean,
they're not a thing.
Some people have more fun with the deck, right? But it's like,
and they can absolutely do that at their kitchen tables. I guess that have Splinter Twins and Death Ray Shamans and all the other stupid stuff that doesn't belong in competitive.
Well, that's the thing is, like, some people have fun with the deck, but, like, when Krarkland's, like, a tier 2 deck, like, it's great for the format because it's not, like, it's not something you're playing against every round. When somebody does their thing, that's cool, they did their thing, but you don't have to experience it every round. When it's the consensus best deck in the entire format and, like, the play experiences with the deck are horrible, like, it makes the format as a whole worse. Like, a lot worse. Like, I know people that just aren't going to events because they don't want to play against this deck. They want nothing to do with it because it's so unfun. It's so resilient to hate. It's so powerful. It kills so quickly, but it also takes forever to kill. Like, you're dead on turn 3, but the kill took 15 minutes.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah, it's that's the other thing, right? Is it's maddening because, like, on the one hand, I wish it was an easy fix where you could just be like breaking and entering, right? Like, that was an easy fix. It was a stupid thing. It was an unintended rules interaction, and they were just like, all right, we're going to button this up. Problem solved, right? Problem solved itself. They can't do that with this as far as I understand it at this point, because the way that mana abilities function is the issue.
Yeah. I mean, and it would be hard to fix at this point. You're right. I think it literally is just a mistake card. And look, there's a Pro Tour coming up soon. There's Modern at the Pro Tour. It's a team event. It's going to be Standard, Modern, Legacy. And I know from talking to some people that I know that are going to be at this Pro Tour that this deck is going to be there, and there's going to be copies of it, like a lot of copies of it. So
if you're going there to win, why wouldn't you play the best
deck?
Well,
you should play it. You should 100% play it. But I think what we're going to see is it's going to show up, and they're going to have a hard time showing Krark Clan Ironworks Mirrors on feature match. Like, that is going to be something nobody wants to watch at all. And I think Modern is a big enough format where it's like, oh, if you know everyone's playing this deck, like, I'm just going to play Infect. And, like, you can certainly metagame for it, but I'm hoping that it shows up in large enough numbers that, you know, WotC looks at it. And when they do, we can kind of go back to playing with cards people actually enjoy, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking back at the discussion that I was having, and somebody asked why I dislike KCI so much, and I said, it's solitaire decks are bad for the game, which I'm 100% stand behind that statement.
Well, we can debate this later, but I think that a lot of solitaire decks are bad for the game. I think it's good to have, like, one or two. I think, like, giving the option to have this play experience to people is important, but making the entire game this play experience is bad.
Sure. So I was like, so that was the first part. And then I said, solitaire decks that rely on rules loopholes and are very resilient to hate and are bad for competitive play and coverage and new player onboarding and player retention. Like, that's it. Lose, 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 right? Like, we're losing on every conceivable front except for, like, the fun of one or two people, or even however many, it doesn't matter. The bottom line is, it is bad. So their response was, should we Axe, Storm, or Coco, or Tron? And I was like, all of those decks have had something banned, right? Like, we've done literally everything except ban Graveshot.
Has Tron had something banned?
Cloud Post.
Oh, well, that's not... Yeah, I mean, sure. That card was messed up, but yeah.
Right? Like, that's the thing.
I mean, that was a different deck, but, like, it's the same idea. It totally is the same idea. I get it. Like, it's not from the Tron deck, but it kind of was. But
right, but if there was... Yeah, I mean, like, nobody wants to play against 12 Post.
Well...
In Modern.
So, well, the thing is like, 12 Post exists in Legacy, and it's totally fine there. It's, like, a fun deck that's, like, actually kind of, like, a cool feature of the format, but it's because Wasteland exists. And, like, that's the thing here is, like, Krark Clan would be fine if, like, I had a Force of Will. Like, if I, like, didn't have to leave up 2 mana every turn. Like, it has the same Splinter Twin effect where it's like, oh, I just played this 4-mana Sorcery Speed thing. I won the game on the spot. Right? Where it's like, I don't know. It just makes the game...
Or then post-board, you do it on turn 5 with guttural response back.
Yeah, but, like, it turns the game into this spot where it's like... People talk about, you know, like, stuff getting invalidated, right? And it's like, when Krark Clan's good, like, anything that costs more than 2 mana is invalid. Like, it's just not a real thing. It's like, you need to have already stopped them for you to even play, like, a 3 or 4 drop. Because there is no Force of Will, where it's like, if I was playing Legacy, like, I could tap out for a Jace and, like, still leave up my Force of Will, and, like, I'm not going to lose on the spot. Like, they might have an answer. They might have, like, a Spell Pierce or a Guttural Response to counter my Force of Will, but, like, they don't always have it, and then there's some interplay and some interest here, but, like, that card doesn't exist in Modern, and so when you play against this deck, like, your deck should be all things that cost 1 and 2 mana and ways to stop this, and that just invalidates so many archetypes and options, you know? Mm-hmm. So, I don't know.
Well, and it, yeah, it's just, so, bottom line, the unanimous decision of the podcast is Kirkland Ironworks, the card, needs to be banned. Just kill it, because this is just going to keep happening.
Well, okay, so can I also just not, like, I agree with you, that is unanimous, except, like, that is the decision I would make, but I would put the caveat on there that if they decided they were going to ban Ancient Storings, or if they decided they were going to ban Mox Opal, that KCI could stay.
But there's no reason to do that.
Well, there's not, but, like if that...
Why would you kill three good decks?
Well... Ancient Stirrings is too good of a card. Like, and so is Mox Opal. Like, that is the reason. Agreed. Is like, KCI is a worse card than those cards by a lot. But
we don't need to kill Affinity so that people can keep playing Ironworks. That is a ridiculous trade-off.
I'm actually of the opinion that Opal being banned would be good for Affinity. It's a pretty controversial and ridiculous opinion, but I don't think banning Opal kills Affinity.
Well, it makes everybody play Hardened Scales Affinity.
Maybe, but which, like, is not the point I'm making is that, like, thing. If, like, you wanted to ban the card, ban the busted card, right? Like, Mox Opal is, like, comparable to cards that are restricted in Vintage, like, better than them in some cases. And Ancient Stirrings is, like, better than cards that are already on the ban list in a lot of scenarios. So it's like,
sure,
you know, I don't know. It's like, I think there are arguments for those cards to be banned. So, like, I'm not saying they need to be banned, and I understand your point that, like, they would hurt other decks, but, like, I could certainly envision a scenario where WotC's like, okay, look, Ancient Stirrings was too far, we're going to change it up. And it's like, if WotC, like, wanted to print, you know, Ancient Stirrings Light that was, like, look at four cards, the same effect, and ban Ancient Stirrings, like, that'd probably be cool. They could, you know, do something like that, I don't know.
It would probably have to be, like, three.
Three makes it too bad, I think, but whatever. That's not relevant.
Or like four, and it can only grab artifacts.
That also makes it too bad, but that whatever. The point is that those cards are very powerful, and there is a world that exists where they could be banned. And if that's the case, then Kirkland could stay. But, like, if they're not banned and they want to keep the other decks around and, like, not touch those, then Kirkland needs to go.
Yeah. I mean, there's, like I said, I cannot envision a world in which they go, you know what we really want? Eggs. And you know what we really don't want? The premier aggro deck and the premier big mana deck. Like, there's a 0% chance. Or let me say, there's always a chance. But if that happened, that would be a very serious concern for me in the sort of overall judgment making apparatus that's in place.
Well, so, like, and the thing is, though, is that, like, Ancient Stirrings is just too good. Like, Oath of Nissa exists, and it's, like, a comparable card to Ancient Stirrings, except that it's worse and it only sees three cards. But, like, in Tron, like, if Ancient Stirrings was banned, you could play Oath of Nissa, and then the deck would change a little bit. But Tron's already a really good deck. Like, maybe it's okay if they did that. I don't know.
I'm not saying that, like, Ancient Stirrings needs to be illegal forever, but I think banning it to hit this deck is stupid.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense. Like, if you were going to ban Ancient Stirrings, it would be because, like, this deck and Tron were too good or something. Right. Yeah, okay. But anyway, enough of the ban talk, enough of the sad, you know, ask your stuff talk. Let's hit on something a little more interesting. Sounds. Let's give some people some presents.
Give them what they want. Right, so The mailbag portion is one of our patrons. I sort of put it out. It was like, hey, we're recording. What do people want to hear about? A couple people chimed in. One person asked about decks that get an immediate boost from Core 19. And this is kind of stuff that we touched on during the set review, but I wanted it to be a little more focused in the sense that these are cards that I would play today.
Well, not only are they, like, cards that we would play today, it's cards that got played today. Like, Core 19 is legal on MTGO right now. And,
yep,
like, I'm on there playing, and I'm seeing some of these cards. Like, they're not always showing up in 5-0s, but like if you play in the leagues, like you'll see people trying these cards out, and it's like I'm starting to get a feel for what is real, what is not, what is, you know, what is at least starting to happen, right? It's like maybe it's a flash in a pan, it doesn't stick around, but these cards are, you know, they're here for now, and we'll see where they go.
First one, Elvish Clan Caller, is so easy. Like, having two mana lords is the marquee, right? Like, Elves gets away with having a lot of three mana lords because they have so many, like, creature-based sources of mana, but having access to a two mana lord that you can play if you don't have a turn one elf on turn two is great. Being able to tutor for more of them is also great. Like, because getting to six mana in an elf deck is like falling off a log, right? Like, it doesn't take a lot of work to get to six mana, and then you can just bang, 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 bang.
Yeah, so my initial impression of Elvish Clan Caller is that the elf deck we had previously was very good. It was a very, you know, tuned and focused deck. And Elvish Clan Caller did not give it, like, a new plan of attack. Like, it wasn't like they printed Thoughtseize Elf, right? Or, like, Counterspell Elf.
Sure.
Or, you know, Removal Spell Elf. But
Counterspell.
Yeah, sure. But they did print a card that was in a very important part of the mana curve. Because Elves is, like, all ones, threes, and fours. They had Dwinin's Elite, and I think that was, like, the only two. Like, sometimes they play Devoted Druid as, like, a combo piece, but, you know, more likely the deck is just all ones, threes, and Coco, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And the nice thing about this is that, you know, it's an elf that you have to respect with Court of Calling now, where, you know, they can court for two. Like, before, if the elf deck couldn't court for three, like, you could, anything was fair game. Like, if I'm Jeskai, I'm electrolyzing two of your X1s for one. I'm going to kill both of them. I'm going to draw a card. And I know you can court for two, and that just doesn't matter. But now it's like, well, shoot, you know, they could get an Elvish Clan Caller. Maybe I can only kill one of those. And it just, like, it just gives the deck more options. I don't know that you need to play four of these cards. Like, it, the templating of the card makes it look like you want to play four, right? Because it has this, like, tutor copies of itself out. But I think you can definitely get away with, like, just playing two of it or maybe three of it because you don't really need to add that much to the deck already. It was already a good deck. And it gives you this other plan of attack. Like, once you have two of them in play, like, you're attacking, right? Like, you don't want to be, like, tapping your elves to put another one in play. Just get in there. You know, all you guys are getting +2/+2. It's going to overrun by itself. Right. So, you know, two or three, I think, is a great spot to start. You know, it makes your Coco hits a little less anemic. Like, a lot of times the deck would Coco and hit, like, Elvish Mystic and Azuri, which was fine, but, you know, you'd rather hit Azuri and a Lord or whatever. Yes. And the other thing was that the deck only had one actual Lord it was playing, so it just gives it another one of that effect, which is important for, like, the alternative beat-you-down plan.
Yep. Thorn Lieutenant, I'm not ready to dismiss Thorn Lieutenant. Its body is good enough at two mana. Like, a 2-mana 2/3, I'm at least interested. Like, I'm listening. And then the fact that it can't be 1-for-1 is something that Elves is in the market for. Like, it gives you, like, value Elves, which is not, besides Dwinin's Elite, is not something they normally have. So, like, adding that to the mix, I'm into that.
So, I think Thorn Lieutenant could be good. Like, it could definitely fit in the deck. My problem is that I just think Elvish Clan Caller is better. So it's, like, competing on the same mana spot.
Probably correct.
Like, that's my only issue with the card. Like, I think I could envision a spot where it is good, but, like, I'm going to start with Elvish Clan Caller and go from there, I guess.
Yeah. So one of the things, the follow-up question, or the second question, was we have a patron that's very into Elves, which is great. I personally think that there is, especially now with, and I would put Thorn Lieutenant sort of in this mix, maybe because of the mini overrun ability. It just, like, gives you more sort of, like, dodge and weave, where, like, Azuri gives all your elves stuff. Thorn Lieutenant only gives one, but, like, if it's the one that doesn't get blocked, you can just pump that specific one. is I would be very interested to see a build that included Copperhorn Scout, which is an elf that does not see a lot of play these days, but it is probably, and in the show notes I wrote it down as the best elf that you're not playing. And so Copperhorn Scout is from Scars. So single green for a 1/1. It is an elf. It is a scout, as you would assume based on its name. Whenever Copperhorn Scout attacks, untap each other creature you control. So it gives all your elves pseudo vigilance. It has insane synergy with Heritage Druid. Like, it allows all these sort of crazy, like, collected company, mid-combat, Court of Calling. I mean, hell, you could even just go all in on this and, like, do Elf Ball, where you have, like, some big X spell, like, some big direct damage X spell that you are building up to.
It's really sweet with Omnath. Locus of Mana.
It seems a little deep, but...
Well, a lot.
I guess.
Deep. It's a lot deep.
I mean... sure. I mean, can't we do that? Can we do something like that with Karametra?
I don't know.
It doesn't matter. The bottom line is, well, that's not going to happen. But you could elf ball it, right? Like, that's an old elf thing, was just, like, make a bunch of mana and then, like, fireball somebody.
Yeah.
Or disintegrate them or whatever. I don't hate that. Like, as of right this second, I still think Black-Green Elves is probably the most consistent, like, quote-unquote, best build.
Well, if I'm playing Elves right now, it has white in it.
Sure.
And that white, it is playing Stony Silence.
Stony Silence.
Probably have Gaddock Teeg in the deck, even though it's not even good in the deck, but I probably still have it.
Sure. I put him, yeah.
You need to respect that. That's a card that's good against KCI, and you need to respect that deck.
Yep. Yeah, don't get got. We say that all the time. So that's the elf stuff. But I, like I said, I really do like Copperhorn Scout. I do think it has a lot of potential, along with a lot of the new tools. So don't be afraid to innovate. And also, like, Copperhorn Scout's 10 cents. So, like, go spend 40 cents, see if your deck gets better. Militia Bugler in humans, I think it's just immediate slam. Like, a lot of the impulse effects that were designed into Core 19 specifically so that people would not have to shuffle, which is something that I said, like, as it went in, I think it was in our preview thing, I was like, there's a lot of these, I didn't call them impulse effects because I hadn't seen the impulses, like, not on my mind as a card, but I was like, they're moving away from fetches and tutors, because for new players, like, constantly having to shuffle their deck is off-putting. And then during, like, one of his little Twitter mini sessions, Ethan Fleischer was like, we don't want to do this, so I added these impulse effects so that people could just, like, look at the top four, look at the top three, and not have to shuffle their deck. So Militia Bugler is one of those, and that card for humans is the card advantage, or, like, the card, I guess it's not, I mean, it's I guess it's advantage,
right? It is card, like, advantage, but that's not, like, not why you're playing it in humans. So, like,
correct.
All right, so for some perspective, I'm playing a Team Unified Modern event this weekend. I am playing the deck humans. I don't like humans, personally. It's not my playstyle. But I am playing it because I think Militia Bugler in that deck is pretty messed up.
Mm-hmm.
When we talked about the show spoiler, I said this card might see play. It could see play. After playing with it, I realized I was wrong. It will see play. That card is really good in the deck.
Yep.
We were just talking about Ancient Stirrings. Seeing five is too many. Like, plain and simple. Like, for one mana, you get to see five. And that's really good when you're looking for specific things. Well, humans has this kind of issue where, you know, all of its creatures kind of are spells. Like, that's kind of how the deck works, is that they're all just, like, kind of irrelevant. Like, every creature's kind of an irrelevant body. that just has a spell attached to it, and then you just kind of like add up those spells and the bodies just kind of win, right? And they all do very different things. And some of the things that they do are horrible in some matchups and great in other ones. Where it's like, if you're playing against KCI, all you want to do is like draw Kitesail Freebooters and Meddling Mages. Or if you're playing against, you know, I don't know, the Mirror, all you want is Reflector Mages to keep sending stuff back to their hand, or Thalia's Lieutenants to make your stuff bigger. And, you know, it's the cards you want are different depending on the matchup. And Militia Bugler seeing four is a huge boon to the deck. It's a really big deal. It makes the deck a lot more consistent. It makes the deck a lot more redundant. And it's also card advantage. Like, Ancient Stirrings is really good, and it's not card advantage. It just is a cantrip, right? This is like a 2-3 body, which is a good body. And it has Vigilance. So, like, it clogs at the ground. It holds Thalia's Lieutenant counters very well. It triggers Thalia's Lieutenant and Champion of the Parish. And then, on top of all of those things, it finds you what you're looking for. So, you know, the problem with it is that it's a little mana intensive, right? Because it costs 3 mana, which is, like, a little bit more than you want to pay for a 2-3 body. I don't even think humans would pay 2 mana for a 2-3 body. So, like, 1 mana to look at 4 cards, like, if that was the other effect, like, probably isn't that good.
Sure.
Except, this is an Aether Vial deck. So, like, the fact that you can Vial this in, find what you're looking for, and then cast that spell is so good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or even having, like, Vial on 3 is not out of the question, right? Like, Vial on 3, 4...
Not out of the question. Vial on 3 is, like, good in this deck. It's all, like, depending on the deck or the matchup, like, you want to put Vial on 3, so, Mantis Rider. You can bring your Mantis Rider in, or you can Reflect a Mage at instant speed, which is pretty messed up sometimes. Or, you know, you can Sin Collector in their draw step, you know?
Yes.
And a lot of times, like, the deck is also land light, so a lot of times you'll have 2 lands and a Vial, and you take your Vial up to 3 just so you can cast your 3s.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know.
Yeah, so...
4 cards is a lot.
Slam Militia Bugler, you will not be disappointed.
But hold on, before we move on, I'd like to point out something else with this card. Like, we were saying 4 cards is a lot, and it's great in humans, but that's, like, not the only place you can play this card. I was talking to one of my friends, his name is Andrew Main, who is pretty famous, not famous, but he has some renown in the Magic community, specifically in Modern, because he was very, very good with Pod and Collected Company decks and plays a lot of like green creature combo. And he was saying specifically that he thinks this card is really messed up with Vizier of Remedies and Devoted Druid, and I can't say I disagree. Like, it just makes that deck so much more redundant. Like, and the fact that it's in the same color as Vizier of Remedies, and the fact that it hits just both of those cards, and it hits Walking Ballista, and it hits Duskwatch Recruiter, is pretty insane. Like, I think this is a huge boon for Devoted Druid decks, which have, like, kind of fallen off, but also, like, pick up again. I would not be shocked if, like, 6 months down the line, this is the best card from the entire set.
Yeah.
All right.
Desecrated Tomb and Stitcher Supplier, I think, are both extremely playable, and especially in Dredge. Stitcher Supplier, probably not. I actually asked Aaron Campbell, I was like, is Stitcher Supplier plus, like, some sac effect, like Alter's Reap, as good or better than Cathartic Reunion? Because it's... Cathartic Reunion has been 2-3. Stitcher Supplier plus Alter's Reap is been 6-2 at instant speed.
Well, so, look, I would not play Alter's Reap with this card, but I do think Stitcher Supplier has a place in Dredge, because recent Dredge lists are playing the card Shriekhorn, which is a terrible Magic card. Cards should never be in any deck ever, except it's, like, fine in Dredge. It's, like, acceptable in Dredge. But the problem is, like, when you're playing Dredge, sometimes you get Rest in Peace, or sometimes they have a Leyline of the Void, and then your Shriekhorn looks really dumb. Like, you're not going to mill them out. You can try. It's not happening.
Well, not with 3 charge.
Not with 3 charge cards, you're not.
Not going to get the job done.
And, like, in the bad scenario there, where, like, you're playing through hate, like, Stitcher Supplier is a 1-1. Like, that's not great, but, like, when your plan is, like, play my 1-1, play my, you know, 2-1, play my 3-3, like, it's better than having a Shriekhorn, that's for sure.
very fair. And Desecrated Tomb, I think, is just, I don't know if it's main deck, it's probably sideboard, but it gives them the ability to go wide. And because you're just like, when you can play it on three and get back a Bloodghast. Oh no, you can't get it back on three.
Well,
can you? Let me
think. Like, you could play your land, get back a Bloodghast, play your Desecrated Tomb, then Prize of Amalgam comes back and like triggers it. There, so you like, go. Yes,
I knew there was a sequence there that.
Well, the other thing that's nice about it is like, you know, you can just play it and then like
flyers.
Flyers are good if they like surgical extract all your Prize Amalgams or something like out of your graveyard. Like their surgical extraction might give you 2/1/1 flyers. So like, sure. That's a thing. I think when you get Rest in Peace, it counts as things leaving the graveyard, I believe. Like, your graveyard gets removed. So, yes,
your graveyard gets exiled. So
yeah, so if you had dredged, like, a bunch of stuff in your graveyard that was just sitting there and they rest in peace, you might get, like, 5/1/1 flyers, which, you know, isn't, like, it's kind of like a Magical Christmas Land scenario that, like, they're casting a Rest in Peace on turn 4, and you already had this in play, and you already had stuff in your graveyard, and that stuff didn't come back already, right? But, like...
Yeah.
But it puts people in these awkward situations, and it's like, as like a one of, like a spicy one of in a dredge sideboard, I could definitely see it.
Yep. Bant Spirits actually gets a huge, huge upgrade. Remorseful Cleric for the side and Supreme Phantom for the main. Remorseful Cleric is the graveyard one. Yep. And Supreme Phantom is just a 2-mana lord.
Well, which we've already, yeah, that's the big thing, is it too
spoken at length about how good they are.
Well, Modern is just so fast. It's like, if all your lords cost 3, like, you're not even a real tribal deck anymore. It's like, the decks that are good are the ones that have redundant 2-mana lords, right? Where it's like,
mm-hmm.
an elf to an sure. extent, but elves is more like a combo-y deck, right? Where it's like 3 kind of feels like 2 because you play 3-mana creatures on turn 2 in that deck. Yep. But yeah, like, Merfolk isn't even that great right now, but it was good for a long time, and it's still it's definitely playable. It's just like, isn't, you know, tier 1 anymore, but it was good because it had redundant 2-mana lords. And like, Humans is good because it has, doesn't seem like it has redundant 2-mana lords because it really just has Thalia's Lieutenant, but between Thalia's Lieutenant and Phantasmal Image working as another Thalia's Lieutenant, it does have redundant 2-mana lords. Yep. So yeah, like, that's the thing, is they want 2-mana lords, and Spirits didn't have it. Like, the only reason Spirits was even like playable before, like, if you ever tried playing Blue White Spirits or like Jeskai Spirits in Modern or like Esper Spirits, the deck's just too slow. It just is clunky and slow, and it just isn't good. And Spirits was kind of like trying to copy Elves by playing like Noble Hierarch to like make their 3-mana stuff cost 2 so that the deck wasn't as clunky, right? And now they mm-hmm. just have the 2, so it's a big get for the deck.
Yeah, I'm very excited about that card. I've been less excited to lose against it a number of times, which I already have.
That's fair.
man. So, non-white black X decks that wanted Lightning Helix but couldn't play it get Sovereign's Bite now. It is slightly worse, but it is analogous to Bump in the Night. Right, it's like Bump of the Night is a worse Lightning Bolt, and Sovereign's Bite is a worse Lightning Helix, but
a lot worse. For the record,
sure, it is a lot worse. I mean, Bump in the Night is a lot worse than Lightning Bolt. Yeah. But if you either are already playing 4 Lightning Bolts, or you know, like, you now have 8 of that,
sure
thing. And that's pretty great. And we used to have to pay 3 mana. Back in my day, we used to have to pay 3 mana in black to get a decent drain effect. And it even wasn't that great.
That's fair.
So I'm in with Sovereign's Bite. It's great. 8-whack, red deck wins, goblins, that whole sort of sphere. Goblin Instigator is a almost Mogwar Marshall. Mogwar Marshall has a lot of technical things that make it unreprintable in Standard, not the least of which is, if we ever see Echo in Standard again, I'll eat an entire can of tuna, including the can.
Yeah, that's like, an awful mechanic. Probably not coming back.
Weird. So Goblin Instigator is the next best thing. Right? It's like, get a dude, he brings a buddy
along. Dude, on that note, though, if you ever get a chance, you should look up Patrick Sullivan's rant on Echo. It's great. It's very good.
He's got a lot of good ones.
Oh, he does. But this one's
The
Ravenous Chupacabra one's great, but he's just like making fun. He's like, oh, did you want to pay 4 mana for that spell? Did you want to pay 4 mana again for that spell? It's great.
And then Goblin Trashmaster. I'm about the Trashmaster, and it's funny because like I feel really bad because it's now like it's seeing play in Legacy.
Sure.
And it's great in Legacy Goblins, and Legacy Goblins already like got better because Deathrite Shaman isn't there to like save people from Blood Moon anymore. So they also now have this thing that just like blows up their hate cards and is 4 mana, so like it's hard to kill.
Well, saves people
it's
from big Blood body. Moon. Save people from the 1/1. What's his name?
Oh, yeah. Lackey.
Goblin Lackey. Save people from that. That was the card. It's just like, oh, I have a 1/1 that if it hits you, I win the game. Oh, well, I just played a 1/2, so go ahead.
So Goblin Trashmaster is sweet, and the incidental artifact hate on like a chunky 4 mana lord, I'm all about it. And obviously, like there's plenty of ways to get goblins to sacrifice. So I'm all about the Trashmaster. Chain Whirler is already seeing play, like as a 4/4 in red deck win sideboards, which is amazing to me.
Oh, Chain Whirler is a good card. I mean, it's same playing like Legacy now too. Legacy Goblins is like, back.
Yeah.
It's back.
That's just like nutty. It's so crazy to me. But this card is part of that constellation of wonderful goblin-ness. But definitely worthy of an immediate slot, especially like if we're living in a world where KCI is a thing. And you can instant speed sacrifice goblin to destroy an artifact. That's something I'm at least possibly interested in.
Fair.
And it's good against a bunch of other stuff. Death and Taxes, Smallpox, Resource Denial, type decks, get Isolate instead of Path for mana dorks. And that is a huge deal. I cannot stress enough how important it is to have something that kills a mana dork that does not ramp your opponent when your goal is to mana screw everyone. Like, I personally will play 4 isolates at least to start.
Dude, please don't.
I'm doing
it. If you're playing black, it's just like worse than Abrupt Decay and worse than Fatal Push.
Well, no, I in this scenario, I would be playing like green white.
Oh, well, sure, but like I think the card is good, and I agree with your assessment. But like 4 seems aggressive. Like I love this card as like a 1. Like if you're playing blue white control in modern, like you put one of these in your sideboard right now. Go do that. Or like,
sure. I mean, I would never do that.
You wouldn't, obviously. But like even DNT, like if you're playing DNT, like you could do worse than putting one of these in your sideboard. Like DNT played Sunlance, and that card is really bad, and like. This card's not always great, but like it's gonna do a lot of what you wanted and just like be good. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's worth a spot, at least to start. Like, there are certainly metagames where like you just don't want this at all. But the fact that it exiles like is relevant. Like, you can be playing against eggs and they just play the Terraria and you're like, get that out of here. You know, humans like keeps the land light, very greedy Aether Vial hand. Like, oh, I got my 1 land Aether Vial, I'm gonna get them. It's like, no, friend. You're going to be sitting on 1 land looking real sad for a couple turns.
Mm-hmm. Yes. While I'm smallpoxing you.
Yeah, right?
Like, I'm telling you, Flagstones, Isolate your Aether Vial, Urborg, smallpox your land and your mana dork, I win the game.
Yeah. Well played.
But yeah, it's definitely, it belongs in the 75.
Yep.
Period. Soul Sisters could actually, I think Soul Sisters could reasonably play Resplendent Angel. It gives the deck another payoff for gaining life.
Here's my thought. I do not want Resplendent Angel and Soul Sisters. Okay, I think.
Okay.
I mean, maybe you could. It could go in Soul Sisters, but like, I'm not excited about it there. But there's an off the wall white life gain deck that has been doing really well in Modern recently, actually, and that is Martyr Proc, which I think a lot of people get confused with Soul Sisters because they seem like both white life gain decks. But Martyr Proc is actually like a very different deck. It's like a weird white prison deck that, like, Soul Sisters is kind of like an aggro deck that just like gains life as like a way to put more power on the board, like counters on a Johnny Spider-Man and whatnot. Martyr Proc is like a weird control deck, prison deck thing. And
yeah, it plays four main deck Ghostly Prison.
Yeah, like it plays Ghostly Prison. It uses like Emeria the Sky Ruin to like just, like, literally it just stalls by just gaining a ton of life with Martyr Sands and just doing this over and over again. And then Emeria just like gets back all these cards that like it chump blocked with or like threw away. And then all of a sudden it wins. Mm-hmm. And like in that deck, it's really easy because you're gaining like 10 life every turn. With Proclamation of Rebirth, Martyr of Sands, it's really easy to trigger Resplendent Angel, and if they kill it, like, it's really easy to bring back with Emeria. So it's like a pretty messed up engine in that deck. So I could hunt, and like, it's a deck that's already like just trying to hit land drops and like has a ton of mana and wants to do stuff with the mana. So like activating the ability is not, you know, irrelevant. I think that, you know, that could be an auto fit in right there in that deck.
Yeah, Martyr Proc is a hard deck to deal with if you don't have like really good graveyard hate.
Yeah, you need graveyard hate against it, and that's not even like always enough because they just like have one mana 6/6 flying lifelinks. And they play it's like a Ranger of Eos, so they can go and get those one mana 6/6 flying lifelinks, two of them.
Yep. Some of them play Sun Titans, and even if Sun Titan isn't bringing something back in the graveyard,
I don't think they're playing Sun Titan anymore. I think they switched to like more Planeswalkers. Like they're playing Gideon of the Trials and like the 4-mana Gideon to kind of be better against combo decks. But at the same time, like these are all things, and you know, as like a 1/2 of Resplendent Angel could be insane in that deck. Just like an engine, just get way ahead in any Faramir type card.
Tokens and white weenie decks. The Hero of Bladehold used to be and still is an exceptional card. On its face, it was better when the format was a little bit slower.
It was better when Reflecting Rage didn't exist, that's for sure.
It was much better when Reflector Mage didn't exist. Leonin Warleader, I think, is... the lifelink on the tokens matters.
Yeah, okay. Let me help you with this one.
Lay it on
me. It is worse than Hero of Bladehold as a card, but it works with cats. And we have other cards that are cats in Modern. And some of them are actually surprisingly good. In fact, there's a cat that was banned for a long time in Modern that is illegal.
Sure.
And is very powerful. And it goes well with that card.
The Wilder Nakal.
The Wildest of the Nakdals. Yep. And I have played against tribal cats at my local Tuesday night FNM. I lost to it. I got blown out. I thought... my sweet Death and Taxes deck with my Eldrazi Displacer and my Thalia and, you know, Restoration Angel. All these sweet cards are going to be really good against it. And he was just like...
And then you played against a deck like that has 30 creatures
Wild
in
Mikado,
it.
Wild Kasali Pride Mage, Pride Sovereign, which is a surprisingly messed up card, into... it's a 5-mana one from Amonkhet. Regal Caracal. Yeah, he went into Regal Caracal. Yeah. And that deck was... a lot better than it looked. Oh, Loam Lion is a really messed up card. Step Lynx, a cat.
No, Loam Lion is a card.
Yeah, no, Loam Lion isn't one. Loam Lion is just a fine card. It's just a playable. Step Lynx is a very good card.
Step Lynx is a ridiculous
card. That is a card that has seen a lot of play. It's a very, very powerful card. That's a cat. So Tribal Cats is, you know, it's not tier one. I'm not going to like sit here and lie to you that this deck is tier one. But it is certainly playable. Like, I...
yeah, green, white. Cats.
You could do Pride worse than playing
+1/+1 for each other cat you control. I'm into it. I mean, I like it. I do think, like I said, I think War Leader, and I think there are a bunch of other like lifelink cat token generators in Core 19. So there you go, tribal cats, like make it happen.
Could be a thing.
Somebody, yeah, it could be a thing. I mean, clearly it is a thing because you got rolled by it.
I did get rolled by it. Gosh darn it, Brian Cannell.
So that's something to look into. And then Tezzerator, like Thopter Sword, any of those blue black like artifact prisony kind of decks. The new Tezzeret, the 5-mana Tezzeret Artifice Master, is amazingly good. Like really, really, really good. Like his +1 triggers Sword of the Meek. So if somebody manages to kill your Thopter Foundry, you can still get a token every turn, and that token will trigger Sword of the Meek, and you can continue to go to town.
Look, here's my thing with this card. I think it is playable in Modern. It's a very powerful card. The ultimate doesn't really do anything, but the zero just kind of wins the game. So in certain decks...
Well, yeah, use zero, zero to draw two cards. Yeah,
in certain decks, it's insane. It strikes me as more of like a sideboard card right now. I could see decks playing it and them being good. Like, it's possible. This deck would be like one of, like, would be a legitimate, like, good Modern card if Seed of the Side Knot ever got unbanned. Just gonna throw that out there. Seems unlikely, but like,
I don't know about why they would unban one specific
Well,
one.
Like, if they unban, like, if for some reason they like banned Mox Opal, and like in concession to doing that, they're like, here are the artifact lands back. Like, I don't know why they would do that, but like they could. That's like a thing they could do. And if they did that, I think this card would be insane. Like, it'd be amazing. It'd be a very good card. So, you know, I don't know why they would do that, but if they did, that's a real thing. And for now, like, my big issue with the card is it's just like very bad with Ensnaring Bridge, which is like the best artifact in these Tezzeret decks currently. So, it does work with Sword of the Meek. You're definitely right about that, but I think you're gonna have to build, like, find a new way to build the decks if you want to play this card.
I guess. I mean, 1/1s are good with Ensnaring Bridge. Like, I don't hate that.
I mean, 1/1s are, but it's just slow. The zero doesn't really do anything. Like, you don't even want to be using the zero in those decks.
Well, the whole deck is slow. That's the whole point.
Well, it is, but like, you really don't want to be like drawing cards in Lantern. Like, you don't want to get stuck with too many lands in hand so that you just like are dead to what's on the table.
No, I wouldn't play it in Lantern. I'd play it in one of the dirty blue-black Tezzerator decks.
Well, yeah, I mean, it could work there. Those just like, I just don't see those, you know? You could play it in Blue exist. Tron.
You could play it in Blue Probably Tron. And Blue Tron actually had like a surprisingly good show recently.
Shadow Shock Trooper.
So, yeah, I mean,
the only person playing Blue Tron on all of MTGO, and he's just like still winning with it.
Yeah, but it's an adapted Blue Tron list. Like, it, like, definitely look it up. It's really fascinating. There's a lot of neat stuff in there. But back to Core 19. But this 4-mana Johnny Adversary of Tyrants, I think that it's just generically good, right? Like, if you're playing any kind of good stuff deck, like, I would play this in Abzan. I would play this in, like, because the -2 for like get a 2-mana creature back to the graveyard, like, that's strong. You know, play this guy, get back your Scavenging Ooze, feels really good. Like, play this guy if you're playing like Abzan Traverse, right? Like, play this guy, get back your Grimflayer, feels really good. Like, you get a 4/4 back for hit a 4/4 back, and then you still have a Planeswalker. Like, that's. Like I said, just it's generically good. I would play this in, like I said, in those Abzan-y, token-y kind of decks. In one of the slots that used to be occupied by like probably one of the Gideons. Maybe cut like one Gideon ally of Zendikar and put one of these guys in.
Yeah, you certainly could.
So that's the That's that. So SCG Philly is the next event that I'm playing. Both of us will be there. I will definitely actually be there this time, because my boss is going to be in the United States. I've made 100% sure that he is not last minute flying to Germany, which is why I couldn't go to Richmond. You're playing in the main event. I'm playing in the Modern Classic on Sunday. So I will be around just sort of chilling on Saturday. Hanging out stuff. So I will be visible. I mean, definitely feel free to hit me on Twitter if you're around somewhere. And you want to say hey, or if you just see me, I'm fairly conspicuous. I'm not hard to find if you would like to find me. So if you see me, definitely say hi. You know, love talking to people. I'm sure I will have some stuff to give away. So keep your eyes peeled.
Yeah, man. And, I'll be there. I'm jamming the main event. I'm probably playing Legacy. Like I said, my teammate's playing Krarklan Ironworks, and I really didn't want to play that deck. I don't like it very much, as you could probably tell from earlier. So I'm letting him play it. He actually enjoys the deck somehow. So he's going to play that. And, I'm getting to play my favorite modern card that should be legal, Stoneforge Mystic, in the only format I can. Yeah.
It's fine.
That card is not. We're not talking about that today. But I will be playing it in Legacy. I don't know how good the deck is anymore, but it should be a good time. Hopefully we do well. And yeah, I mean, if you see us, come up, say hi, give us some shout outs, ask Aaron to sign random cards.
Sure. I'll sign anything.
Specifically swamps. Like, if you just find any swamps you want them signed, showing up.
Yeah. Oh man, maybe I'll just go to the land station and sign all the swamps.
That's a pretty aggro move, dude. Just sign every like, swamp in the land station.
every swamp in the land station and be like, what you're doing isn't technically against the rules, but we're gonna ask you to stop doing it anyways.
Oh, that's great.
That would not be the first time in my life that I've had somebody say something like that to me.
Oh, that's so good. Yeah. Yeah. So get your swamp signed.
I'll bring just a box of Sharpies.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So definitely say hi if you see us. So before we get to the spice rack, you can visit us on Facebook, facebook.com/turn1thoughtseize, all spelled out. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at @T1thoughtseize. Zach is at @A22EN. You can watch a stream at twitch.tv/T1thoughtseize, sponsored by our friends at Card Hoarder. You can see our YouTube videos at youtube.com/turn1thoughtseize, all spelled out. You can read my columns at blog.cardkingdom.com. You can become a member of the Thoughtseize Cabal at www.patreon.com/turn1thoughtseize, all spelled out. And you can see all of our content on turn1thoughtseize.com. Our spice rack card for this week is the Scourge of Innistrad Limited, Invisible Stalker.
Yeah. This card doesn't look like it's modern playable, but...
False. This card... I built so many bad decks around this card.
No, that's fair. I have seen this in Boggles. I've seen people playing Bant Boggles. Mm-hmm. I've lost to it in Boggles. Yeah. Hexproof, as it turns out, is a really good mechanic. Hexproof on unblockable creature, it turns out, is a mechanic that shouldn't exist. And this card is really powerful in specific matchups. And recently, it's starting to see play in the sideboards of Infect. Zan Saeed popularized it this weekend with his win in, I want to say, it was Atlanta? It was Atlanta.
Okay.
Whatever, there was a modern event, and a modern SCG. He won. He had four of these in his sideboard. And essentially, against decks that were killing all of his Blighted Agents and Glistener Elves, decks like Jeskai or decks like Death Shadow... this was good enough. It turns out, you know, you have enough pump spells to kill them from 20 if they're not clocking you and they're just trying to remove all your stuff. So, really good tech in the sideboard of Infect for those people that want to beat KCI right now. This will help shore up a lot of your bad matchups, and you should be playing it.
Yeah, I mean, a non-zero number of Infect games have been won by casting Become Immense on Noble Hierarch, yeah. And this is way better than
way
that.
Way better. Well, yeah, way better.
Yeah, yes, yeah. There's no need to qualify that. Just it's unconditionally better. Yes, it's just better. So yeah, grab some Invisible Stalkers. They go in a good deck, and they also go in a bunch of terrible decks that are pretty good.
They also feel really sweet carrying a Daybreak Core in it. Just gonna throw that out there.
I was gonna bring it back and say that it's really sweet with like a Delver and a what was that stupid card?
Runechanter Spike.
Equipment. Runechanter Spike. That's what it was. I built that deck.
Well, like it, the Runechanter Spike is like crazy, right? Because the idea is just it's an invisible guy, right? So it's like literally just a floating axe coming at you, right? If he's carrying a Runechanter Spike, but
well, he has a tri-corner hat and he's a jaunty.
I mean, yeah, that's already a flavor fail, right?
Wet jacket. But
the Daybreak Cornet is the one that just blows my mind. He's literally an invisible guy wearing a like sun band on his head, and you're just like, I can't see him. Where is he? How do we block this? Right? Yes.
Where is this gentleman?
Where could he possibly? There's a floating ring of light. Like, go get him. Block him, stupid lingering soul.
Doesn't work that way. It's magic. Wizard did it.
It's fair.
All right, let's get out of here.
Yeah, man.
We will catch up with you next time. Anybody in Philly, we will see you there.
See you in Philadelphia. Love you guys.